On the screen behind me, you'll see a picture of a quilt that I made 2 years ago. I made this quilt. There it is. Okay, it's back. I made this quilt for an art exhibit at Skip Carteret's church in Port Townsend. You guys all know Acacia. Skip is her dad. And they were members of this church for many, many years. In fact, some of them still are. I don't know. For many years, during Holy Week leading up to Easter, Port Townsend First Baptist Church hosts an art exhibit called Crossroads, Where Art and the Passion Meet. And they invite members of the community to choose one of the stations of the cross and meditate on it and then create a work of art that depicts that station. And I had wanted to do it for a long time, but that is a really hard time of year because it's also when we have our quilt show and I'm really busy with that. But this year, 2 years ago, I wasn't having any quilts in our show and I had the time, and so I said, this is the year I'm going to do it. I chose station number 10, which is titled Jesus is Crucified, and I meditated on that. At the time, I prayed and meditated on it, and Jesus gave me some feelings, and he gave me thoughts, and he gave me ideas, and he gave me an image, but he didn't really give me any words. But I had to write some words because I entered this quilt in an exhibit called Sacred Threads, and it's in the Washington, D.C. area, and I just shipped it off this week, and along with shipping the quilt, I had to do some writing about it. And so I had to do some more meditation on it for a while. And it was actually in worship about 3 weeks ago. Something that Alice said made the words just flow. And so these are the words that you get this morning. So I prayed and meditated on this image of the cross, and I didn't really get much insight into Jesus' death, which is what I was hoping for. But in fact, I got insight into his life and to the resurrection life that he made available to all of us. Before Jesus came, the before part of the quilt, the life of the community was ruled by a ruling class that was more interested in keeping up appearances. They were more interested in keeping in power and in keeping on the good side of the occupying Romans. They were more interested in upholding the letter of the laws that they taught than they were about the spirit of the law, the spirit of God that inspired those laws. And they didn't have much sympathy or compassion for a community that was already downtrodden. Part of that letter of the law required one to be pure and holy and kept separate from those things that are not pure and holy. And so Jesus was always getting in trouble for hanging out with tax collectors and sinners. In fact, they called him a glutton and a drunkard because he ate with tax collectors and sinners. In fact, Lorraine recently did a series of messages that started out with this scripture, Luke 15:1-2. Now, the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." In fact, when Jesus hears this muttering, he gives them three parables, all of which he's talking about these tax collectors and sinners and who they mean to him. And he compares them in each of these parables to something really precious. In the first parable, he compares these sinners to a lost sheep. Now, a sheep would be something enormously valuable and very precious to the man who owned it or to the shepherd who watched it. It is a person's livelihood that sheep represents. That would be something very precious. In the second parable, Jesus compares these sinners to a lost coin. And I thought about a community that is almost entirely a bartering system of economics. Some of those people probably never had a coin in their entire lives. Imagine how precious a coin would be to those people, and that's who Jesus says these sinners are. And in the third parable, Jesus compares them to a precious son, your own child. In the parable of the lost son, or the one we normally call the prodigal son, how much more precious could that be? So, before Jesus, sinners; after Jesus, something very precious. And again, the teachers of the law and the Pharisees taught that we are to keep ourselves, or they were to keep themselves, separate from anything that would make them unclean, such as touching a leper. Here's a story from Matthew chapter 8, verses 1 and 2. When Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds gathered around him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched that man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." Immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. And here's another story that's very similar. On his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled, Luke 17:11-19. On his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." When he saw them, he said, "Go show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. So Jesus is doing two doubly not okay things. First of all, he is cleansing the leper. And second of all, he's a Samaritan whom they're supposed to keep themselves separate from. So in this case, he touches the leper, and instead of becoming unclean himself, they become clean. This is the after, the life of Jesus in their midst. Another example was they were not to touch a dead body, that if you touched a dead body, you became unclean. You know, unclean means that you are not fit to participate in the religious life or the life of the community. If you touched a dead body, you became unclean. Except if you're Jesus. Soon afterwards, Jesus went to a town called Nain, N-A-I-N, and his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, "Don't cry." Then he went up and touched the bier where they were carrying him, and the bearers stood still. He said, "Young man, I say to you, get up." The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. Here's another one. Now Jesus returned, and a crowd welcomed him, and they were all expecting him. There was a man named Jairus, a synagogue leader, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house because his only daughter, a girl about 12, was dying. And then there's several verses, and later on in this story, we hear, while Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter is dead," he said. "Don't bother the master anymore." Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid, just believe, and she will be healed." When they arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were waiting and mourning. "Stop wailing," Jesus said. "She is not dead, but asleep." And they laughed at him, knowing she was dead. But he took her by the hand, and he said, "My child, get up." Her spirit returned, and at once she stood up. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. He touched the dead. He was not made unclean. and they were made clean, or they were given life. In 2006, Carol Ann Palmer and I went to Burundi to teach quilt making as part of a trauma healing and economic development project among women who had been raped and cast out by their society. This is what society said to do. You don't keep a woman in the family who has been raped, and you do not allow that child to grow up in the family. But we went and taught quilt making to 16 women, and those women went back to their villages, and everyone in their village wanted what they had learned. So they had been raped, they had been cast out, they had been rejected as though they were lepers. They were not allowed to participate in their society as it was. And after, the before and the after, they were honored, they were respected, they were made into celebrities in the villages that they lived in. So the law and the scribes and the Pharisees said, don't hang out with sinners and tax collectors. But Jesus compared them with something very precious. The law said, don't touch lepers. They will make you unclean. Jesus touched, and the lepers became clean. The law said, don't touch the dead. Jesus touched, and they were filled with life. The society said, cast out these victims and don't let those children be raised in your family. But Jesus, through Thars, accepted them, gave them skills, healed them, and they became celebrities. I keep thinking about our yearly meeting and about other yearly meetings that want to split because people don't have the same thoughts or they don't have the same beliefs on things. And I keep thinking that this is not the way of Jesus. It is not to divide or to split or to keep yourself holy and sacred from, but to embrace and to transform. And that is what Jesus calls us to. And so this message today, I think, is really important for us, particularly for our yearly meeting. I want to read to you a quote from a book that Donna recommended that I read about 5 years ago, and I've read it several times now because it's been really important to me. It's called If Grace Is True, and it's by Gully and Mulholland, who are a couple of Quaker pastors in the Midwest. So it says, my experience with God and the examination of scriptures have convinced me that God delights in getting his hands dirty and lifting men and women from the gutter and cleansing them. True holiness delights in restoring the impure. So what does it mean to say that God is holy? Holiness is God's ability to confront evil without being defiled. God's holiness does not require him to keep evil at arm's length. God's holiness enables him to take the wicked in his arms and transform them. God is never in danger of being defiled. No evil can alter his love, for his gracious character is beyond corruption. This is what it means to say that God is holy. God's love is incorruptible. So yes, we are called to be holy. Yes, we are called to be pure, but holiness and purity does not mean separation. It means embracing and transforming. Here's another quote from this book. We are called to be perfect, to be pure. Perfection is demonstrated not by moral purity, but by extravagant love. We are like God not when we are pure, but when we are loving and gracious. So yes, we are called to be pure and perfect, but God's perfection is love.